Good evening and welcome to another edition of Midwest Beats. I'm your host, Tom Lounges, and this program is all about music and the people who make it. Well, last night I was cruising around on the internet and I happened across this young guy named Jacob Dulwich. He's an 18-year-old and he has the heart of a crooner and the sound of a crooner as well. He's an old soul, as he likes to say. He's going to be singing some songs live on the air. We're going to talk about why he's so fascinated with the past and where he's going to take the past into the future. Lots of things to talk about, lots of music to listen to as I introduce you to Jacob Dulwich of Northwest Indiana. It's all coming up after your headlines here on Lakeshore Public Radio. Good evening and welcome back to Midwest Beat here on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lounges. This program, as you know, is about music and the people who make it. Tonight, I'm going to introduce you to a very talented young singer from right here in Northwest Indiana. We do so many international and national artists on this program that sometimes we forget to reflect back on where they all began in their hometowns. And tonight, we're going to introduce you to such a hometown talent. Jacob Dulwich is with us. He's 18 years old. He's got the soul of, an old-timer, I guess, because you are into the crooners. You're into the Bing Crosbys, the Frank Sinatras, the Perry Comos. Tell us a little bit about yourself, Jacob.
Well, yes, Tom. Like you mentioned, I do a lot of crooners. That's my primary form of music. I also branch out into other like stuff from the 40s and 50s, like some limited country and gospel. But my primary thing is the crooners. Like ever since I was a little boy, the kind of music that I enjoyed the most and I listened to the most were Sinatra and Bing Crosby. I remember as a five-year-old kid, I was listening to Bing Crosby's White Christmas. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know what? That guy is honestly the best singer I've ever heard. I really want to sing like that guy if I ever start taking vocal lessons or anything.
It's so interesting because, like I said in the introduction earlier, I was just cruising around on the internet last night. I had a guest that needed to change shows. And I was like, okay, who am I going to plug in? And I happened to see your profile on the Rock and Rollers page. And the Rock and Rollers do a lot of work here in the region with Northwest Indiana bands. And I thought, who's this kid? Oh, he likes crooners. Went back and looked at your YouTube page, listened to a few tracks, and found out you not only like them, but you can sing like them. Now, how hard was that to emulate these people like Bing Crosby?
Well, I mean, honestly, it just took a lot of listening and really just trying to learn from the masters. I mean, I wasn't be unique and create my own style. I was just kind of just trying to learn from what I hear. And then after like about 4 years of vocal instruction from my wonderful vocal instructors, Michelle and Rich Wallen over here in Crown Point, I started to get more comfortable. And eventually I was able to kind of bring a little bit of my own style into it naturally. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of where I got to the point where I felt more comfortable performing live and doing a few recordings. Because before I just was learning and I didn't quite feel confident in myself yet. But then after a few years of training and listening, then I felt confident and I started going out and trying to do some stuff with it.
You're 18 now. You mentioned 4 years of vocal lessons. Did you start at 14? Did you start at 12 as far as the lessons? When did you decide this is something I seriously want to pursue?
Well, when I was about 12, I started like with piano lessons and all that. But I just thought piano wasn't really for me. I was much mm-hmm. more into the vocal side of things. So I started kind of getting a little bit into vocal, not really too much into it, just dabbling in it a little bit. But by 14, I was really serious about it, and I really started going full head into it. And I was I really determined that what I wanted to do were the crooners, because mm-hmm. I had some previous vocal instruction in the past, and they were my old vocal instructors were saying like, oh, do this song, do that song. But then I got Michelle and she really allowed me to kind of go in the direction I wanted to go with it. And so I said, okay, then if I'm going in the direction I want to go with it, then I'm starting with Frank. I'm going with Bing. I'm going with Dean.
Frank's a great place to start. A lot of people don't realize that vocals are in many ways just another instrument, like a piano or a violin or anything else. Sinatra was probably one of those that defined that the most. His voice became part of the Dorsey Orchestra. It wasn't just a singer. He was an instrument. And do you look at it that way? Is that how you approached it as far as your voice complementing the instrumentation that you sing to?
Oh, for sure. Because I know whenever I listen to a lot of Sinatra's recordings, especially his ones from the 50s, because he had a brilliant arranger in the 50s, Nelson Riddle. He did mm-hmm. some of the best arrangements I've ever heard in music ever. And when I listen to it, I'm like, yeah, you know what? Sinatra's voice is very powerful, but yet he's got very powerful arrangements too. So they both really support each other very well. It's not like one is, you know, greater than the other. They just both like, they're just in such good harmony with each other.
Now, do you sing jazz or do you sing pop or do you sing both? Because Sinatra and some of these other artists went into the jazz realm, the Mel Tormes. Do you embrace that side as well, or do you stick strictly to the Great American Songbook pop style?
Oh, no, I kind of try to devolve into some jazz, too. Like, I get a lot of Nat King Cole I'll do sometimes, and he was definitely very jazz-oriented for sure. And, yeah.
Going back to the trio style when he was doing the trio or doing the latter day?
More his solo stuff, okay. I would say. But I still throw some jazz influence in. I like throwing some Tony Bennett, more jazz influence songs in there. I'm a big admirer of Count Basie for sure. And he was very jazz oriented. Because I think he did two wonderful albums with Bennett and Sinatra in the late 50s and the 60s. Mm-hmm. They just had such good chemistry with each other.
If you just tuned in, we are talking to a Northwest Indiana talent, 18-year-old Jacob Dulich, and he's embracing the old sound with a very modern approach, mindset, I should say, not merely an approach, because your approach is very traditional.
Oh, extremely traditional. Like I was talking to you before, Tom, before the program began, we're talking about Bublé, for example. Mm-hmm. I have a couple of his CDs at home. I find them really enjoyable. I got nothing against them. But he when he sings it, he kind of tries to do it more in a modern variant. Like, he's still traditional, but he kind of throws a little modern twist on it. That's not how it is for me. For me, I really just sing the songs as they were sung back in the 40s and the 50s, because that's what I grew up with. Like I said, I didn't really listen to too much modern music when I was a kid. My parents and my grandparents always played the old stuff for me. So I really, yeah, I mean, I just sing it like that naturally. It's not even something I consciously do. Sinatra was my vocal instructor as a kid, Bing Crosby was, and all the classic crooners. That's just how I do it.
Wow. You want to sing something?
Yeah, I guess we could do something. I always was a pretty big fan of the Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers pictures. And the track we got right here, They Can't Take That Away From Me. It was from one of the Fred or Ginger pictures. I forget which one it was now, but it was a really good tune. It was by the Gershwins, and they were definitely very good songwriters.
All right, well, let's do it. We've got special tracks here recorded, and Jacob Dulich is going to sing for you here in the studio on Lakeshore Public Radio.
Many, many crazy things that will keep me loving you. And with your permission, may I list a few. The way you wear your hats, the way you sip your tea, the memory of all that. No, no, they can't take that away from me. The way your smile just beams, the way you sing off key, the way you haunt my dreams. No, no, they can't take that away from me. We may never, never meet again on that bumpy road to love. Still, I'll always, always keep the memory of the way you hold your knife, do 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 do, the way we dance until three, the way you've changed my life. No, no, they can't take that away from me. No, they can't take that away from me.
All right. Jacob Dulich, live in the studio, and truly, that sounds like a record. That is pretty amazing.
Thank you,
Tom. Wow. Now, you've got the phrasing, the timbre, everything going on there. Now, is that because of your vocal coaches? Is that something that just came natural, that they helped fine-tune? Where did that voice come from?
Well, like I said, it came from years of listening to the old standards. I mean, it definitely took a lot of listening. I'd listen to the same songs over and over again, trying to memorize the exact phrasing that Frank or Bing or Dean would use. I mean, I was really zoned in on how they would do it. And I just, it just a lot of respect for the music. I mean, I really respect how the originals were done, and I tried to kind of mimic it the best I could while kind of still being true to myself.
Hmm. Amazing stuff. What do your younger friends, I mean, again, you're 18 years old, you've been embracing this music since you were a toddler, it sounds. Clearly, you've grown up with kids your age, and they've got to be listening to contemporary radio or iPods or whatever it is the young people listen to, Pandora. What do they say when you bust out a song like that?
Well, I mean, from a lot, definitely a lot of people my age, at first they're kind of like, why do you listen to all this old music? I'm like, what are you, an old man or something like that? And so that's usually the initial reaction I get. But I got a few of my friends that are actually almost as into it as I am, honestly. They listen to it quite a bit. But eventually, you know, with the kids that aren't as into it, when I play it for them, and especially when I sing it for them, they kind of start to kind of, you know, lose any prejudices they got against it. They'll be like, I'll put the song on in my car when I'm driving my friends around, and they'll be like, no need to turn it off. It's okay, fine. You can have it on. No big deal. And then but then when I sing it too, they're always like, oh, sing another one. We really love how you do your voice. And a lot of them have never even heard these old standards before. So it's like a completely new experience for them. It's like hearing a new song that just got released, honestly.
Now, do you go out to the karaoke places and do any of this kind of stuff? I know you're still underage to go to the bars or anything, but there are a lot of different places, coffee houses that do karaoke from time to time. Different festivals will have it. Is that something that you enjoy doing, or is that something where it's like, nah, I'm going to save it for when I do a gig?
No, I mean, I enjoy taking any opportunity I can get. I haven't really found too many yet, 'cause, like, I've only been really starting this as a actual public thing, like, within the last year. I've done a birthday party, wedding. But my main thing that I've really been focusing on has been nursing homes and assisted livings.
Okay.
Because the residents there really like the kind of music I do, because it's from their era, and they like how I am true to it. And I also try to bring a certain, you know, compassion about them. When I go in there, I'm not just doing it to make a few bucks or to just have a public venue. I do it because I really do care about the seniors a lot. I mean, my grandparents were inspirational to me in my life. And, you know, and the World War II generation was too, because I'm a World War II buff. I love reading about all the struggles they went through during the Depression and World War II. So I have a lot of respect for seniors. So, I mean, that venue really has worked for me well. I go to, like, a lot of different facilities in the Northwest Indiana area and the South Suburban area. So that's my primary venue. I want to expand outside of that, of course. But, I mean, I really do like the niche I found so far for myself.
One of the things that I've covered on here with different guests is the fact that music is such a healing force. And the fact that you sing in nursing homes, retirement homes, makes me flash back to when I had the guys from Jersey Boys in here and Under the Street Lamp, and they were doing this thing at the Star, a PBS special, Harmonies for Healing. And one of the guys that was a contender in that process, I think he's 78, 70 years old. Now, he's another local guy. And he sings like a bird, plays guitar, old folk singer, Woody Guthrie style. And he would go in and he would sing songs like Johnny Come Marching Home, Don't Sit Under the Apple Tree, all these old school songs. And he said there would be people sitting there that had Alzheimer's that were just kind of zoned out. And the second they heard the music, they perked up and started singing along. Do you find that to be the case in some of the places you've played, that this music almost flips the switch on some people?
Well, I definitely found that my own experience, but I mean, I've also read studies to where they say that actually music from people's era, you know, like when they have Alzheimer's, does increase cognitive ability. But yeah, I mean, in my personal experience, I really have seen it quite a bit. I mean, because every nursing home or assisted living I've gone to has always wanted me back.
Mm-hmm.
I've never had one that has not wanted me back. And if there has ever been a conflict of interest, it's just when been with the administration, never with the actual people themselves. They always want me back and they always love what I have to do. And I mean, I really do see them perk up. They'll be like kind of tired, kind of their eyes will be drooping in the beginning. But then all of a sudden they're perking up. And then I come and talk to them later on. And they're like, oh, thank you so much for coming. It's so nice to see a young man doing these old standards the way you do them.
I had a professor in here. We were doing a World War II special at the library. And he was in here. He was the presenter of it. And he was talking about how in many ways the big band era helped us win the war. Because of the fact that the soldiers would go to the PX and they'd be able to blow off steam and they'd be able to dance, and how that release gave them the energy and the spirit, I guess you'd say, to go back on the front. And that had they not had that morale boosting from the big band artists and the Sinatras and the Dorseys and the Glenn Millers, that they probably, we may not have been as successful on a different front. Would you kind of agree with that?
Oh, I agree with that theory 100%. I actually got a CD at home that's called Songs That Got Us Through World War II.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, that really kind of proves that theory right there. But yeah, I mean, that big band music really did give them a chance to have some fun when a lot of these guys didn't really have that chance. A lot of them, you know, were very poor because they'd lived through the Depression. They'd seen a lot of struggles when they were kids and now, you know, going through the greatest war in history. So yeah, I mean, that was helpful. And then also the ballads too, like say White Christmas, which is still like, I believe, one of the largest selling songs of all time. White Christmas or I'll Be Seeing You or something like that, or Sentimental Journey, you know, like different like emotional songs that also helped the guys that were missing their loved ones, their girlfriends or wives. And it also helped the people on the home front that were also missing them. So, yeah, both the ballads and the more up-tempo ones definitely really helped help the soldiers and the people at home with their morale.
You seem very studied in the music you love. You don't just sing it. You seem to live it. You study it. What is where are you going to take all this knowledge? What is the end game here for you, or at least the next five-year plan at this point with your music career?
Well, like I said, I've just kind of just gotten started with it. I'm definitely more of an amateur to the music business.
But you seem to have your head on pretty straight, like you know where you're going to be going. You seem to have the ambitions there.
Well, ultimately, it all comes back to my faith, first of all, because Jesus Christ is definitely the most important person in my life and my inspiration. I'm a very devout Serbian Orthodox Christian. I go to St. Elijah's just over here in Maryville. And so that really guides me. So, I mean, I think a little bit in the future for sure. You know, I'm trying to say, okay, you know, I'll try and call these venues and get this out there, record this and try and see if that goes somewhere. But I guess I'm thinking ahead a little bit, but not trying to think too far ahead. You know, I'm trying to kind of let the Holy Spirit guide me a little bit. But yeah, I mean,
things come as they do.
Yeah, I mean, because that's how I've done it so far. I mean, I when I first got into this, I had no plan at all. I mean, I just started off at Munster Med Inn because my grandfather was in there for a time. And then all of a sudden, I'm in all these different nursing homes and assisted livings in like 5 months and doing a wedding and a birthday party. So things have just kind of taken off on their own. I haven't even had to put much thought into it. It just kind of
That's pretty amazing. Now, have you played Serbfest and some of the other places? I know St. Elijah is very involved in a lot of the musical festivals and things, too, in the area.
No, I haven't done any festivals yet because I was thinking of doing that this summer, but I wasn't, you know, too organized with all that quite yet. I probably will start looking into it more in the summer, and especially at the Serbian events. I have a wonderful relationship with people in the Serbian diocese, so I probably could try and talk to some people there and see if I could get into it. But yeah, I mean, those are all opportunities. You know, I'm going to be looking into all that stuff. It just, you know, I just like I said, I'm new to this, so I don't have everything lined up quite yet. But it's getting there. I'm getting much more organized now.
Let's do another song. What would you like to sing?
Well, let's see what we could do. We had kind of more of a ballad kind of tempo with They Can't Take That Away From Me. How about we go with Fly Me to the Moon, which is a good standard from 1964 that Sinatra did. And Tony Bennett also did a good cover of it, too.
All right, we're going to do it now. Jacob Delitzsch, live on the lakeshore.
Fly me to the moon. Let me play among the stars. Let me see what spring is like on Jupiter and Mars. In other words, hold my hand. In other words, baby, kiss me. Fill my heart with song and let me sing forevermore. You are all I long for, all I worship and adore. In other words, please be true. In other words, I love you. song. Let me sing forevermore. 'Cause you are all I long for, all I worship and adore. In other words, please be true. In other words, in other words, I love you.
Excellent. Sinatra channeled right here on the lakeshore. Not only do you love the music, not only do you sing it well, you have the style, the fashion. You got the hat, you got the jacket, the tie. You've got the Sinatra look. Now, is that something you just naturally come to? Does that come with the music? Or is that something that you've always worn, that kind of style?
Oh, yeah, honestly. I mean, I feel...
you're the whole package here.
Oh, yeah. I mean, with the suit and tie and all that kind of stuff, I feel just at home at that. I mean, like, I'm always, you know, pretty formally dressed, I would say, compared mm-hmm. to most people. Because, yeah, I mean, that's another thing I really embraced about Sinatra and about the 40s and 50s is the style, too. I just really kind of like the clean-cut nature of it. And when I go to the nursing homes, the old-timers really like that a lot, too, especially. You know, it's really something part of me. I feel like almost like if I'm going out to a performance and I don't have a jacket and a tie on and a hat, I'm like, I'm not, like, truly into it, you know? Mm-hmm.
It kind of helps power the song by looking the part.
Yeah, it does. It's like an image I put forth. I mean, I put the music out there, but I also have to, you know, put the whole Sinatra look out there, or else right. I don't feel like it's genuine enough.
Now, you are singing tonight two pre-recorded tracks and some of the stuff you've done at the weddings and things you've done to pre-recorded tracks. You would be a natural to sit in with a big band or some kind of instrumentation group. What kind of plan or what kind of hopes do you have in that realm? I mean, are you looking to maybe sit in with somebody? Are you looking to audition, form your own group?
Oh, honestly, I mean, whichever one, either forming my own group or getting together with somebody else, either one would be wonderful for me because I really admire the big bands. And it honestly is in my dream for probably about 5 or 6 years to sing with a big band. That would be that'd be very interesting for me. So, I mean, as the opportunity presents itself, I'll look into it. And I'll keep on doing more research online and all that and try to talk to people that know about it, you know, and hopefully it comes up, you know. And
How does somebody reach you if they want to book you if they hear you tonight and say, wow, that kid can sing, I want to book him for my daughter's wedding? How do they get a hold of you?
Well, I take all my calls on my own cell phone, which is 219-240-5386. Or you can also email me at jsdman22@gmail.com. And also, if you kind of want to see some more like recorded selections of mine, I do have a YouTube page. It's new, but it's getting new stuff added very quickly. Mm-hmm. And that'd be Jacob Sings the Classics 1914 on YouTube. And if you'd like to go out there and like and subscribe to my page, I'd really appreciate that because that helps to promote my business. So if you like what you hear, you know, a little promotion would be very helpful.
YouTube.com is where you can find the videos. And then just type in Jacob with a K, Sings the Classics 1914. 14. All right. That was the year World War II started. World War I started. Is that a significance to why you chose that?
Well, actually, I was trying to put the year of Sinatra's birth, but I actually looked it up, and it was actually 1915. So actually, I made a mistake there in the beginning. But then I just said, I'll just keep it. It's fine. You know, that's still a pretty significant year, mm-hmm. you know.
There are so many crooners of the glory days, the early years. Mel Torme, as we mentioned, Dean Martin, Perry Como. Robert Goulet, I don't really count him. Elvis was famous for shooting TVs out when he came on, so I don't really count Robert Goulet. But Louis Jordan, all these different singers out there. Sinatra, of course, is the one that was at the top of the pyramid. What about these other singers? You've mentioned Sinatra a lot, but you sing a variety of styles. And we talked a little bit about country, and I want to get into that in a moment. Mm-hmm. But what about these other singers? And they all had their own sound. I mean, Sinatra didn't sound like Dean Martin. Dean Martin didn't sound like Sammy Davis. None of them sounded like Joey Bishop. Of course, nobody wanted to sound like Joey Bishop. But Steve Lawrence, he was the poor man Sinatra, as my dad used to call mm-hmm. him, you know. Of these other kind of singers, you embrace their sound as well.
Oh, by all means. I mean, like Sinatra is definitely my favorite, but I feel the people don't look beyond Sinatra enough. When they look at old music, they're like, oh, Frank Sinatra, and that's it. They don't mm-hmm. they don't look at – there actually were a lot of other genius artists of that era too. I mean, one I definitely have a lot of respect for is Perry Como, just because I liked his music style, but I also liked how he lived his life. He was a very devout Roman Catholic, and he was very humble and really cared about his family. He kept them out of the public light and all that. So I respected him for his music and his other – his personal life. He's one for sure. Dean Martin, of course. I really liked his – he had kind of more of a free-flowing style of singing. It was
right.
really good. And, of course, Bing Crosby would definitely be my original inspiration, like I mentioned before. And then some of the less – even lesser-known ones, like the Bobby Darins or the Al Martinos of the world.
I knew Al. Al was a friend.
Oh, you did? That's really interesting.
I still get a voicemail from him on my phone.
That's wonderful.
Yeah,
I was just listening to a song by him on the way here. Actually, it's a song from The Godfather, I Have But One Heart.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good song.
So, yeah, there's a lot of these great talents, and sadly, they're not with us anymore. I mean, Tony Bennett, we've mentioned, is obviously still with us. Engelbert Humperdinck, to a lesser extent, Tom Jones, but he was more the mm-hmm. rock side. But I think he had the characteristics of a crooner if he really wanted to. Elvis is another one that was obviously the king of rock and roll, but he had his first gospel or his first Grammy and only Grammy was with gospel music. And he embraced country, gospel, rock, pop. He is someone you sing as well. Now, how important was Elvis to you?
Oh, Elvis has actually been surprisingly more of a later influence on me. I started really listening to his music probably about maybe 2 years ago. I'd listened to him a little bit, you know, at the Jailhouse Rock, You Ain't Nothing But a Hound Dog kind of stuff. But I really started embracing his music more at large, listening to his gospel stuff, and especially his ballads. His ballads are the things I love the most about Elvis. Because, I mean, a lot of people think of him as just the king of rock and roll and, you know, shaking his hips around and all that kind of mm-hmm. stuff. But I feel that kind of after he came out of the Army, especially, that he kind of became more of a crooner with kind of hits like It's Now or Never or Can't Help Falling in Love or even earlier like Love Me Tender. They were much more like traditional pop kind of songs, in my opinion. So, yeah, incorporating Elvis into my repertoire is not a stretch by any means, especially by when I'm doing those songs, because they really fit in with the formula of my other songs.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, Elvis, like one of my favorite songs of that era was like Surrender.
Oh, yes.
That is a typical crooner song. I could hear so many different vocalists singing that. Who has been the hardest artist for you to bring your own spin on, to encapsulate that sound? Who's been the most difficult?
Well, I mean, I'd say, you know, because I definitely have more of a baritone range. So sometimes Andy Williams and Tony Bennett were a little bit more challenging just because they kind of had a little bit more of a higher range. They're still doable, but, you know, mm-hmm. on bad days, I might hit a clinker or something like that, you know.
Yeah, Andy's more of a tenor, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. I mean,
Moon River.
I still do
I love
that song.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a beautiful song. Yeah, and I can still do Andy, you know, on like days like I guess when I wake up on the wrong side of the bed, you know, my voice might not quite get up there.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'll go to the nursing home, I'll hit a clinker. I'll be like, oh, everybody, please forgive me. And they're like, oh, no, don't worry about it. We just like that you're here, you know. So they appreciate what I'm doing regardless. But, yeah, so, I mean, those would be a little bit challenging. With Elvis, I mean, when we were talking about him, he was a little challenging too because, I mean, he's definitely got a very unique style. You got to kind of throw your voice in all different kinds of directions and all that. And his range was pretty extensive as well in some songs. Like Jailhouse Rock is always still a challenge for me to this day. But his ballads, I definitely can get those down pretty well, you know, if I say so myself.
What do you think of these contemporary artists today? And I mean, there's so many. Rod Stewart, Barry Manilow. I mean, all these guys are doing the Great American Songbooks. What's the new kid? Robbie Williams. They're all doing these traditional songs, mm-hmm. and it's become trendy again. Now, you've loved this stuff your whole life. Now, all of a sudden, Rod Stewart's coming out and making millions on a series of albums. Do you like those treatments that these newer artists, these rockier artists are bringing to the music that you grew up on?
Well, I'm just happy that they're doing something because I think a lot of modern music nowadays is just not in good taste at all. And that's one of the reasons why I really don't
listen to that.
To too much modern music.
That's why we listen to PBS and NPR. Go ahead.
Yeah, like I said, that's kind of why I even stayed into the old music even after I got into my teen years and all that and wasn't just my parents playing it for me anymore because I like music in good taste.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I mean, I'm glad they're doing something with it. But like I said, a lot of them, like, you know, like I said, when they throw more of a modern spin on it, I don't really gravitate towards it. I really like it being done in the original way because if something's not broke, don't fix it.
Right.
That's how I look at it.
What about the female singers? We've talked about all the male crooners, and obviously you're a male singer,
mm-hmm.
but like the Ellas, the Billie Holidays, people like that, Dinah Shore.
Well, definitely I would say my two favorite female crooners for sure would be Ella and Doris Day, which Doris Day is still with
Underrated.
Us.
Underrated. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
People forget about her.
Yeah, she's underrated, and surprisingly, she's still with us, too. People right. don't realize that she's 95 years of age now. But yeah, I mean, yeah, those two were definitely very big influences on me in the female realm. Especially Ella, though, because Ella really had a real jazz flow to her. She really kind of introduced me to some more jazz stuff, as well as people like Nat King Cole and Louis Armstrong, also known as Satchmo.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So,
did you happen to see the Ella tribute that was at the Munster Performing Arts Center about 2-3 weeks ago?
No, I didn't. I knew they had a Sinatra tribute a few months ago. I didn't know
that
had
was
a
good.
One.
Also, but they had mm-hmm. Ella. I actually had the young lady join us on the air, and I went and saw that show. And again, like you, she didn't exactly imitate them. She kept faithful to the sound of Ella. But I thought that was an intriguing show because you forget how contemporary some of these artists are. When you listen to them from the 30s and the 40s on up to some of the stuff they did latter day, when they were covering some modern hits in their style.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's kind of interesting. We were talking off air about Postmodern Jukebox, which a lot of my listeners are probably familiar with. My friend Andy Sutton, who runs a jazz group, turned me on to them about a year ago. And they take these contemporary songs from Meghan Trainor, Taylor Swift, Lady Gaga, and they do them swing style, 40s style. And it's pretty interesting that the song would have been a hit then. And I think the important thing that I learned mostly from songwriters is the importance of the song as opposed to the performer. And you mentioned that with the arrangements with Nelson Riddle and some of the great songwriters that we had out there, Hoagy mm-hmm. Carmichael and all these different artists, Gershwin's.
Cole Porter.
Cole Porter from right here. Who is your favorite songwriter? The actual songs themselves, no matter who's covering them, seem to stand up from that era.
Well, that's why I had to get Cole Porter's name out there, because I would say Cole Porter is definitely my favorite. There's definitely a lot of songs of his I like Night and Day, or I've Got You Under My Skin, or Anything Goes. Those are all very good ones. And then at a close second would be Irving Berlin, maybe just on his White Christmas alone, but I mean, he had other great songs besides that too, like Alexander's Ragtime Band would definitely be one that really stands out to me. For sure. But yeah, those two I would say are my top two favorites.
Do you have any ambitions to write your own material at some point? Have you dabbled with that?
Well, I haven't dabbled too much with it because it just doesn't seem like it flows as well as the singing itself. I might get into it at some point. I mean, I'm not ruling it out by any means, but I think more of my singing is more of what I do because a lot of people don't realize it, but a lot of the great crooners didn't even write their own music at all. That really didn't start coming in until the rock and roll era with Buddy Holly and the Beatles and all. They started mm-hmm. kind of writing more of their own stuff.
Everybody else had Tin Pan Alley.
Yeah, exactly.
All the great, like we said, the Great American Songbook. You want to do another song?
Yeah, by all means.
All right.
Since we were talking about Elvis, I think we'll give Can't Help Falling in Love from 1964 a shot.
From the Blue Hawaii album. This is, once again, Lakeshore Public Radio, Midwest Beat, and Jacob Dulwich singing for you.
like a river flows surely to the sea. Darling, so it goes. Some things are meant to be. Take my hand, take my whole life too.
Thank you very much. Great song, great singer. We are listening tonight to Jacob Delitzsch, and he is 18 years old out of Northwest Indiana. Now, whereabouts are you from in the region? Tell me a little bit about your background here.
Well, like I said, I'm 18 years old, and I've lived in Dyer all those 18 years. It's a nice little town over there.
Which is growing fast and needs wider streets.
Oh, yeah, by all means. I was talking about that with my dad on the way here. It's definitely a pain in the neck with all those streets, honestly, being clogged up. Too much construction, too, but
that's
another conversation. But no, Dyer's a nice town. I have a lot of good friends in the neighborhood there that I've met through various things, from bumming around in the neighborhood, but also local friends I've met through homeschooling and all that, because I was homeschooled for most of my educational career. I mean, I went to public school for a little bit of time, but my homeschooling really had a good impact on me because it gave me a chance to kind of explore different things like music and studied a lot of other interesting things like Latin and all that kind of stuff.
In the people I know that have been homeschooled, I don't hear a lot of the arts come out. They're more into the sciences and the written word, the language arts, but not the creative arts, not the singing and the music. So it's interesting that you have gravitated toward that and credit a lot of the homeschooling to that, because it seems to me most of it's book learning as opposed to, I don't want to say spiritual learning, but I guess music is very spiritual. The creative side, you're tapping into that creative muse through homeschooling. And I just touch on that a little bit, on how that came about, because I've never heard that parallel with homeschooling.
Well, like I said, it was a lot of it, you know, was my own interest. But I've met other homeschoolers that are artsy as well. I mean, because the thing about homeschoolers is it's almost like a mini country. You can't overgeneralize it, because there's just so many different kinds of homeschoolers. It's like the most diverse form of education ever, because you've got people that do it because, they don't like how the public schools are on. You got some people to do it for religious reasons. You got some people to do it because their kids have a mental handicap or something. There's just so many different reasons why people homeschooling. So, yeah, I mean, there's definitely some artsy people involved that I've come across quite a few of them myself. And then there's quarters that are more intellectually and religiously oriented, like you said. But for me, I feel I incorporate all three, honestly, because I mean, I plan on probably studying theology in the future as well, and you know, in addition to normal intellectual pursuits. So yeah, I kind of incorporate all three of them: music, religion, and intellectual pursuits.
On the religious side, a lot of my artists, especially the R&B and the blues artists, were weaned and raised in the church and found their voice, learned to sing by singing gospel. Has the church aspect of it influenced you in some of your musical selections? You were mentioning Elvis's, you know, gospel music.
Well, the gospel stuff has been more outside of it, because in the Orthodox Church, we don't really do a whole lot of contemporary music. We do more like a liturgical chant kind of stuff. It's very ancient, the Orthodox Church. But I mean, that still had its impact on me, because I sing in the choir at St. Elijah's every Sunday. My priest, Father Alex Novakovich, he's an awesome priest, and he lets me do so much stuff with the choir and with music and stuff there. So yeah, I mean, that's driven me. And then also, like I said, my religious faith really drives me to go out and try to make people happy with my music, because I see it as kind of this gift that God gave me, and it's my ministry to other people. You know, I can't just let it go undone. I have to go out there and share it in a positive way, you know. Mm-hmm.
There's a young band out this area, and I've gotten to know them through this show, and I've booked a few shows with them, that started out doing Christian music, contemporary Christian music in their church, and have branched into contemporary pop and country, a band named Capernaum, which is a term out of the Bible. they have turned it into a very commercial. Now they're going to allow the members are going to Columbia College and studying music, becoming very professional at it. So I think it's interesting on how a lot of times the base of the church, going back to the Al Greens and the Little Richards and all the, mm-hmm. the Elvises, of how church spawned them. And it seems like that has had similar impact on you, if not so much rooted in the church.
Oh, yeah. Like I said, I mean, definitely has had similar impact because I mean, my faith is the most important thing to me. I try to be a very devout Serbian Orthodox Christian, and I try to share that faith with a lot of people. I mean, I try to bring my friends to church. I try to share the gospel with everybody because I truly have a strong belief in Orthodoxy. And that's and if anybody if with my contact information, if you want to ask me about the faith, too, feel free to ask me about it because I'm more than willing to talk about my faith all the time.
Music is, like I said, is a very healing power. And we see a lot of that in the religious aspects of it, the musical ministries. Almost every religion has a musical ministry of some sort. Are you looking to, as you mentioned, you go to the retirement homes and things like that. Is that part of why you do that? Is that a ministry-type motive?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it definitely is. I mean, like when I go there, I always mention everybody. The reason why I'm here is, you know, it's a side job and it's, you know, it's fun for me. But I say the main reason I'm here is because of Jesus Christ. And that's why with every single performance I do, I always have to close it on some sort of religious number, mm-hmm. whether it's a gospel number, whether it's like some sort of chant from the Serbian Orthodox Church, or whether it's like a Christmas religious number, like O Little Town of Bethlehem or O Come All Ye Faithful or something like
that.
So
that's like a trademark for you.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's how it has to be for me. I mean, and I think people appreciate that when I close in the gospel number. Like gospel's been something I've really gotten into much more recently. Mm-hmm. So my repertoire is not as large.
Are you talking the traditional gospel?
Yeah.
Like the Swing Low, Sweet Chariot kind of stuff?
Oh, yeah, that kind of stuff. Like, it's definitely much more limited at this point. I'm expanding it because I'm always expanding my repertoire all the time. But, you know, it's getting more developed. I don't feel as comfortable with it in public yet as, you know, I mostly do it at the nursing homes. But it's getting to the point, probably in like 6 months, I'll be just as good at gospel as I am with big band and swing.
Okay. And once again, give that online contact information out.
Oh, yeah. My YouTube page, Jacob with a K, Sings the Classics, 1914. And my phone number, 219-240-5386. And my email, jsdman22@gmail.com. jsdman22@gmail.com.
Let's talk. We've talked a little bit about the gospel stuff that you're getting into. We've talked a lot about the crooners. Let's talk about the country. You said you were rooted in the early country, the 40s, the 50s country, which I'm assuming is your Johnny Cash, is your Merle Haggards, people like that.
Mm-hmm. For sure. My two favorite country artists would definitely be Johnny Cash and Glenn Campbell. Those are the ones, like I said, that's another genre where I'm still kind of just kind of growing into it a little bit. I still need to be developed a little more. I've kind of gotten into it like maybe in the last 6 months, honestly. It's definitely been a very new thing for me. And, you know, I'm progressing more into it. Like I said, it's still something I keep mostly at the nursing homes. It's not my trademark quite yet. Mm-hmm. You know, my trademark is definitely more swing with Elvis on the side, you know, with an added bonus, I guess. But, it's something I'm growing into. And I have a lot of respect for the old country. I think it was very meaningful music. It really was very true Americana. And even going back earlier, I wouldn't even consider if you'd consider this country like something like, Camptown Races thing. That song.
Oh, yeah.
Something like that. You know, that I like that kind of more Americana.
Like a ragtime kind of thing.
Yeah. And like, you know, Americana music from the 1800s. That's good stuff, too. I mean, I'm still, like I said, with all that stuff, I'm still growing into it. But I my repertoire is definitely going to grow much more in the next year, especially since I'm more serious about things now.
At this point in your life. Okay, like you said, you're getting more serious. Are you booking more things? Are you looking to book more things? Are you looking to do more of these community service shows, more commercial shows?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm definitely booking things. Right now, I've been definitely going through the nursing home circuit. It's been working for me. I've been calling activities directors like 5 days a week on that phone with them whenever I can get a hold of them because sometimes it's hard to get a hold of them, you know. So I, you know, any way I can do it, and I'm trying to search online for other opportunities. So yeah, I'm just trying to find anything that comes my way, anything that I can make a few bucks doing and get my name out there.
Okay, what is your thoughts? We were talking about Michael Bublé. Before him, there was Harry Connick Jr. Now, Harry Connick to me seemed much more traditional, much more faithful to the original sound, if you will. I mm-hmm. Just was curious because we don't hear much about him anymore. He's gone off into acting and doing all this other stuff. Were you a fan of Harry Connick?
Oh, yeah, I would say, especially if it's Christmas music. I think he does a lot of justice with that, where a lot of modern artists don't do justice with Christmas music. But, yeah, he's very good. Now, he is definitely more original to it than Bublé is, but he still kind of adds his own spin on it. But I really like how he adds his own spin on it with the New Orleans kind of jazz sound to it, because I've always liked New Orleans jazz. It's kind of reminds me of Satchmo a little bit. And, I kind of like that. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. I think that's the spin that he puts on it that is actually an improvement on the original music. I like jazz, and I like, New Orleans, where it originated. So
now you've done some recordings as well, besides singing to the tracks as we're doing here. We're not going to play those tonight, but tell me a little bit about them. You've done a handful of recordings with some friends. Now, what's that all about?
Oh, yeah, just kind of some amateur stuff, because I'm just trying to kind of sometimes, different programs directors at the nursing homes or other gigs I'm looking for, they kind of want to hear a little bit of my, recorded work. They're like, I don't want to just sign you up. I don't know what you're all about,
Right.
So, yeah.
Not everyone takes a chance on you like I did.
Yeah. Well, actually, I do have a lot of people take a chance on me, but, not everybody. So I got to have a contingency. So, yeah, that's the main reason for the recording, is not for them to really make money or, be lucrative on their own, but just to kind of promote my live business right now. And we'll probably find a place for, actual recordings later on as I keep progressing with this. But right now I'm just focusing more on the live stuff, trying to get my name out there.
One of the things that is very big for the last 15, 20 years now, with the advents of technology, we're seeing duets with late great performers. Lisa Marie on Don't Cry Daddy with Elvis, Nat King Cole and Natalie Cole, Martina McBride doing Blue Christmas with Elvis. Is there someone, if you had a chance to do a duet and sing in harmony with one of your heroes, who would it be? And what song?
Well, if I had the chance, all of the above, honestly. But yeah, I mean, some personal favorites. Can't Help Falling in Love, which I just did, is definitely my favorite song to perform. So doing one with Elvis on that would definitely be very interesting. Doing one with Bing on White Christmas. And I'm trying to think. And maybe doing one with Frank on, like, I've Got the World on a String or something like that. Or Come Fly With Me. One of those kind of jazzier ones from the 50s that he did.
Okay. We've got about 9 minutes left, so I definitely want to get at least another song in. Let's do another one. What would you like to do?
Well, let's see what we got here. How about we go with, we'll go with Beyond the Sea by Bobby Darin.
Okay. He's another artist that a lot of people don't give credit to. And I've had a chance to work with people that knew Bobby, and that he was really a deep jazz guy and really into the standards. And yet he made his fame and fortune with, bubblegum pop and things like that. So it's a shame that he died on the operating table, never got a chance to really come to fruition with his talent. But a lot of different people over the years said that that he really had an old soul as well, something that we've been describing you as. So let's do Beyond the Sea. This is some Bobby Darin, and it's live on the lakeshore. Jacob Dulwich is my guest, and he's singing for you to tracks right now.
Beyond the sea, somewhere waiting for me, my lover stands on golden sand and watches the ships that go sailing. Somewhere beyond the sea, she's there watching for me. If I could fly like birds on high, then straight to her arms I'd go sailing. It's far beyond the star, it's near beyond the moon. I know beyond the doubts, my heart will lead me there soon. We'll meet beyond the shore, we'll kiss just as before. Happy we'll be beyond the sea, and never again I'll go sailing. Scouts. My heart will lead me there soon. We'll meet, I know we'll meet beyond the shore. We'll kiss just as before. Happy we'll be beyond the sea. And never again I'll go sailing. No more sailing. So long sailing. Bye-bye sailing. Move out to our captain. So long.
Bobby Darin lives again here in the studios of Lakeshore Public Radio. This is Midwest Beat. I'm Tom Lounges. The voice that you're listening to tonight, Jacob Dulwich. He's 18 years old from Dyer, Indiana, a gem that we are just discovering here. And do you have any dates coming up in the very near future?
I have a couple nursing home performances that I'm doing. I have this Friday in Gurnee, Illinois, at I believe at like about 1:30. And then I have at 2 o'clock on Thanksgiving Day, I have at a Hammond Whiting Nursing Facility. And then the day after that, I have Bria in Chicago Heights at I believe it's either 2 or 3. I don't remember the exact time right off the top of my head. But if you want to get call me, you can get the exact information. And then after that, I got my normal Munster Med in on Saturday at around 12, I believe. And I'm a regular at Munster Med-In.
How often? Like weekly, monthly?
Yeah, monthly Med-In. Med-In was my first one. I'm really grateful to them for kind of giving me my start performing. A lot of awesome
residents
there.
You really are busy. For just starting out, for being in this a year, I mean, that's a lot of gigs in a very short time.
Oh, and they're growing because, I mean, I'm making phone calls all the time because I'm just trying to get more exposure out there. So I'm always looking for new stuff, and I'm working hard at it.
Gurnee's a drive.
Well, that's a little bit of a drive. The reason why I got into it up there is because we have a monastery right down the street from there, the center of our Serbian Orthodox diocese. And so when I was up there, I got into contact with some programs directors up there. So it's a little bit of a drive, but I'm used to driving up there. I have to go up there for all kinds of church events, so I'm used to it.
What is the end game as far as you're 18? When you're 28, where do you see yourself? Obviously, you would love to be a professional performer, but if that doesn't work out, what other interests? You were talking off air about you're a history major. Are you looking into teaching, going into theology? You mentioned that as an interest as well. What is your goals in life?
Oh, my two other interests for a career are definitely either teaching, like a history teacher, or being a Serbian Orthodox priest. Those would be my two other professions, because I honestly love all three of them so equally that it's kind of hard to choose, honestly. So I'm just kind of hoping God will kind of point me in the direction I need to go, because it's hard making a decision on my own with this.
And again, you can keep up with Jacob and check out more of his music on the YouTube.com. And Jacob Sings the Classics, 1914 is where we need to what you need to type in to find him. Tom, how much time we got left here?
Tom, I was actually I was writing you a note in class hoping the teacher wouldn't see it, but if we need to, we can go ahead and join News in Progress if Jacob wants to go ahead and
do another song.
Do another, but can I request, only if I can request
the
song.
Okay, you can request it.
One of my favorite songs actually is Mac the Knife, a song that I grew up listening to on a lot of oldies and classic rock stations. It came out, what, I think, 1960?
The Darin or the Louis Armstrong version?
The Darin, the Bobby Darin version, as opposed to the Louis Armstrong. They didn't play Louis on the classic rock stage.
Yeah.
Sorry.
All right. Is that okay, Jacob? You want to do that?
That's perfectly fine with me. That's a song I always enjoy doing at the performances. You know, towards the end, it gets a little high and stuff, but it's all right. I manage.
I'll clap anyway.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's cue that up. And again, check him out on YouTube.com. Jacob Sings the Classics, 1914. You can find him on Facebook. So without any further ado, once again, a final time, Jacob Dulwich.
The shark, babe, has such teeth there, and it shows them pearly white. Just a jackknife has old Maggie the babe, and it keeps it out of sight. You know when that shark bites with its teeth, babe, scarlet billows start to spread. All fancy gloves, though, as old Maggie Heath had been. So there's never, never a trace of red. Now on the sidewalk, ooh, sunny morning, lies a body just oozing life. Eeking someone sneaking here around the corner. Could that someone be Mac the Knife? And there's a tugboat, down by the river, don't you know? Where a cement bag is just drooping on down. Oh, that cement is just, it's there for the weight, dear. Five will get you 10 old Mackies back in town. Now'd you hear about Louis Miller? He disappeared, babe, after drawing out all his hard-earned cash. And now Maggie Heath spends just like a sailor. Could it be our boy's done something rash? Ah, Jenny Adava, oh, Suki Tawdry, ooh, Miss Lotta Linya, and oh, Lucy Brown. Yes, the line forms on the right, babe. Now that Maggie's back in town, I said Jenny Adava, whoa, Suki Tawdry, look out to Miss Lotta Linya and old Lucy Brown. Yes, the line forms on the right, babe, now that Maggie's back in town. Look out, old Mackie is back.